time for a Newsmakers interview with Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abley. Why? Because his 2017 budget includes a $60 wheel tax. The legislature will soon be working on the next state budget. What does Milwaukee County need? And should there be a rerun of Opportunity Schools? Mr. County Executive, thanks for having us back. Appreciate it.
Good to be here. Good.
Let's start. $60 wheel tax. Why is it in your budget, and what happens if it doesn't get approved?
Sure. It's in my budget because it is the only legal option the county has for more revenue. And absent new revenue, we will, in this coming year, we would have to make dramatic cuts in services, increases in fees and fares, particularly in transit. So what's that? Why this year? Most people have, I think, noted I'm fiscally pretty conservative. In 5 years, I've never introduced a property tax levy increase. I've vetoed every single levy increase that's come my way. And so people have said, so why would you include the vehicle registration fee this year? The reason is just this. I feel, and I hope most elected officials feel the same way, that anytime you're going to ask the citizens to pay more for government, you better be able to assure them that you're going to give them more for service, or that the consequence of not is something dire. And that's the case here. And just to put that in context, the first 4 years I was able to both restore services, lower our liabilities, improve our credit rating without introducing tax levy increases. What's happened is we have 19,000 retirees, and a very big chunk of them are baby boomers. And we've known for some time that this was going to be an issue, but for the next five or six years, their health care costs go up pretty dramatically. Think, $20, $30 million a year. And, this isn't anybody's fault, but we are not getting that kind of new revenue from the state. And in fact, in transit, the bus system, we get less in Milwaukee County for transit than we did in 2009. We've been able to keep fares flat for 5 years and not cut routes because we've done a lot of some efficiencies, a lot of good grant work, and frankly, we've backfilled from local tax levies. So we put in about $2 million or so more of local money into transit to make up for that. But this year, the combination of less revenue, increasing dramatically expenses, the wheel tax is the only tool we had. And so obviously sales tax isn't currently legal, but I'm not the only person who thinks this. As you'll recall, about 5 years ago, the community and the state created a new position here at county government, an elected comptroller. And the idea was, years ago, the county was hit with a fiscal Hurricane Katrina. Hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, which we are still shoveling out from. And as a community, I think we rightly said, never again. We don't want to get caught flat-footed. So we created this position that doesn't report to me, doesn't report to the county board, reports to taxpayers. And they have one function, and that function isn't to make policy. They don't have budget authority. But they look at the decisions we make and the financial implications, and they watch the horizon for storm clouds, the next Hurricane Katrina. Well, for 5 years, the alarm's been silent until about 3 weeks ago when the comptroller sent an analysis to the county board saying, you need to pass this because we need at least $60 in revenue. Otherwise, we're going to have to make dramatic cuts and keep making them each year until you address this. Separately, the public policy forum, for the first time that I've seen, local independent think tank, they've been around 100 years, they analyze our budget every year, city budget. They, for the first time this year, amended their analysis of our budget proposal, essentially to say, hey, we agree with the comptroller, you need that revenue. Both the comptroller and the head of the policy forum testified in front of the county board last night at their public hearing saying just that. The MMAC is supporting this, and the Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce, and this is not a pro-tax, fee increase group, but they're also, they understand the realities of people getting to work and what the impact would be. So that's why I have it.
Are you able to say if this is enacted, the $60 wheel tax, mm-hmm. the fares would be frozen for 2 or 3 years, and the service levels would not be cut back for the same period?
That would be my goal. I try to be careful about not guaranteeing anything absent certainty about future externalities that could change. But I can say this, for 5 years in a row, we haven't raised fares or cut routes, and that's the first five-year stretch that Milwaukee County has had with no fare increases and no route cuts in probably at least 15 years. I like to think I've done a good job managing your resources. And the reason we put 60 in our budget is I looked at what the sort of projections were, and I said, look, if we're going to do this, I don't want to do this twice. Let's get it right. And also, let's make sure we use as much of this revenue to keep paying down debt, to keep paying down the liabilities I inherited. And again, we've made huge progress there. To me, the worst thing, the most frustrating thing to me, would be to start sliding back in terms of debt. In the last 5 years, when the city's healthcare liability has increased by about $70 million, the county's has dropped by $560 million. That's not the only liability we've dropped, but you know, we've turned the ship around. And the last thing I want to do is see a slide the other way. Obviously, my perfect solution, the state starts funding transit for Milwaukee the way it used to in a level that makes sense. I mean, that alone would address this issue.
The governor has said, pointing to the budget submitted by the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, mm-hmm. that there is an increase in local road aids. Mm-hmm. Is your county, would your county see any significant upper if that became law?
Sure. We would see an increase, and obviously an increase is always better than a decrease. The thing about an increase that's sometimes misleading is the other increase that always happens is the cost of doing repair. The cost of repairing roads very rarely goes down. To be clear, I'm grateful for any increase we get, but I think on a broader level, the policy forum also recently did a study looking at shared revenue from the state to Milwaukee over about a 20-something year period. And about 20 years ago, every dollar that went from Milwaukee to Madison, about $1.07, in some cases even more, came back. And what's the argument to the more rural communities? Well, here is the economic engine of the state. It's the most scalable opportunity for economic development, for job creation. Well, that's not the case anymore. Now, for every dollar to Madison, it's about 80 cents coming back. And I have no need to go back to $1.07, but boy, even getting closer to a dollar back for every dollar that goes in would avoid things like having to tax ourselves again, which is essentially what's happening with the wheel tax.
The Assembly considered, but never voted on, a half cent that would give counties the mm-hmm. option of a half cent for just some of these programs. Right. Would that be the best solution, Chris?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. I tried in the last year when that would come up about new revenue sources and sales tax to focus on the options we have that are legal. I mean, right now, and honestly, I think for the foreseeable future, a sales tax by state law is not a legal option for us. If something gets there, absolutely we'll look at it. But on the other hand, philosophically, I don't like the idea of when the state is giving less back to taxpayers here than what they're paying in, taxing ourselves more to make up for it. That doesn't seem fundamentally fair to the taxpayers in Milwaukee. Now, again, it is what it is. But what I focused on is the options I have that are legal, and wheel tax is legal. One interesting thing about the state of Wisconsin is by law you can only charge a flat fee, so $60. There are other states where state law allows municipalities to a lot more flexibility. So, for instance, they can index the wheel tax to say the price of the car. Mm-hmm. There are some states where if you buy a Ferrari, you're paying $2,000, which is probably the price of your glove compartment. But if you're buying a used Fiat, you're paying $5. It's a bit more a bit less regressive, and we would like to seek the authority from the state to do that. The other interesting thing about the wheel tax in Wisconsin is state law exempts all vehicles over 8,000 pounds in the state of Wisconsin from any wheel tax. So if viewers are thinking, wait a minute, so you're saying the 10% of vehicles that cause about 90% of damage to roads, which is the entire purpose of having a wheel tax, are exempt from wheel tax, you could be forgiven for thinking, well, that must be some fancy lobbying that happened at some point. That is also something we'd like to look at.
Final question on this topic. Mm-hmm. There's a proposal for a $30 wheel tax. Mm-hmm. How long could you guarantee level of service with your bus system and these fares under $30?
It's a good question. We haven't had a lot of time. I need more time to sort of look and model that out. I'm not sure we could go too far without also having to cut other services, but I want to take some more time to look at it before we do. I think if that's where we end up, what we will do as fast as we can is put out a number of models, say 5-year models for the county board to just say, you know, get ready for the sort of cuts we're going to need to make, or consider, you know, indexing it up to 60 over time maybe. You know, it's the usual balance. Nobody wants to make people pay anything more than they have to, and nobody wants to cut services.
This is our first interview since Opportunity Schools failed. Is that the wrong term? Was there some progress by MPS as a result of Opportunity Schools?
Well, I'm not so sure about... I like Dr. Driver. I think she's made progress prior to this and during this past year. I do think... it's the case that whenever there's, essentially an existential threat to an institution, you get people's attention and they're a bit more focused. I think one benefit, and I don't know if this was initially intended, but counties don't typically interact with public school systems, both here and nationally. It's very rare, which is interesting because counties are what provide social services, behavioral health, wraparound services, and frankly, an awful lot of services that very much complement what school districts do. And I say this because in the process of Opportunity Schools and some of the meetings we were having in Madison, I sat down with a lot of the directors, the state directors of departments that don't typically deal with schools. I remember a meeting where Secretary Anderson, Eloise Anderson, said, you know, it's interesting, but just because we typically deal with counties, we really don't interact with schools, but we should, and we can. And, you know, if nothing else comes of it, we spent a lot of time exploring those synergies. And what's interesting is I've since met with Secretary Anderson and others at the state level who are interested in, regardless of what happens with the legislation, you know, hey, taxpayers are paying for those services, they're paying for school, and if we can sort of leverage those functions a bit better, well, that's good. But I think the broader issue is even if you had extraordinary creative policy-based legislation, absent some restoration of funding, it's going to be difficult for the most well-intended, hardworking superintendent to make meaningful change. And we need to make meaningful change.
Which is my next question. Representative Cuenca and Senator Darling have said there will be more MPS reforms. Mm-hmm. What advice can you give them as they look at some of these options? In other words, the next version of not, if it's not Opportunity Schools, but reform should be what for MPS?
Well,
beyond money.
Beyond money, certainly. Throughout this process, I was regularly communicating with both Senator Darling and Representative Cuenca, both of whom are friends and I get along with them, and sharing them ideas as we were looking at things along the way, because I just wanted to be open, and I was meeting with Dr. Driver. I do think that, funding's got to be part of it. Absent that, some of the reforms that have happened in other states include, there are actually some districts that are run by counties, And the idea is, as I said before, it's easier to coordinate when you run mental health. And anybody who knows an urban school district knows they have a lot of issues with mental health. Well, if you are also, you know, the agency that runs schools is the agency that runs mental health, it's a lot easier, and you're a lot more incentivized to coordinate that functionality. That's worth looking at. You know, occasionally people have talked about, I mean, when the mayor, Mayor Barrett, a couple of times had talked about changing governance, and I think, you know, it's worth looking at. You know, I say this as a lifetime Democrat who grew up in Massachusetts, but any organization that for long periods of time is underperforming, it's not an unreasonable question to ask about, well, what's governance? What's the decision-making structure? Because if consistently decisions are being made poorly or at least not effectively, it's worth checking that out. And we have a 9-member elected school board, and I think, you know, there's well-intended people on it, but often they are those outcomes are inordinately influenced by one set of the employees, which is their right to do, but it just means there's a lot more pressure when you're a school board member to listen at least as much to the employees as any superintendent, Darien or otherwise, which is a bit disempowering, and it makes it harder for a superintendent to be able to even, you know, use every option they have. So most superintendents I've worked with at MPS have been very cognizant of kind of walking that line, you know, and bringing people along. There's a lot of disparate groups you have to keep happy. And, you know, even in a perfect world, you never get it perfectly, but we need to do something.
You mentioned mental health needs of MPS students, but the state government reinvented the mental health system in Milwaukee County. Mm-hmm. Give us an update. Are you pleased with it? Major progress?
Absolutely, yeah.
Any unexpected surprises?
You know, most every major metric at the Behavioral Health Division since state law that changed governance, the Mental Health Board, has been positive. Okay. We had years and years and years of deficits. We have surpluses. We are serving more people. Instead of going up, emergency room visits are going down. Involuntary detention's not going up, they're going down. We have more peer counselors. More interaction and support for the Milwaukee Police Department, which means we've got now CART teams that when they encounter somebody that they suspect may have issues with mental health, they don't have to guess. We have a 24/7 psych nurse they can call and immediately start getting answers on, okay, here's where you should take this person, here's who you should talk to, and in the meantime, there's a team on the way to take them off their hand. Which means faster diagnosis, faster time to treatment, sooner to de-escalate, better outcomes, and then for the police, more time patrolling the streets. We've made some very significant progress, and it's under behavioral health, or at least a big part, that our project to end chronic homelessness with permanent housing, we announced last summer that we were going to get to a functional zero for the chronically homeless in Milwaukee with permanent housing. In 3 years, which itself would have been faster than any metro in America. And knock on wood, at 1 year, we're about 75% of the way there. It's an effective group, a great staff. So more efficiently, we are serving more people and doing a better job. And I remain grateful to the state legislature for getting that through. And as I like to remind people, that vote was 122-2. And in hyper-partisan Wisconsin, you know, when you can get an issue off of the who wins, who loses, you know, not turn it into a fight, we're doing a good thing.
The unrest and violence in Sherman Park in August, mm-hmm. the state, city, and county came up with some type of aid. Mm-hmm. Were those Band-Aids, or is it just a matter of time till we see the next acts of, unfortunately, unrest and violence?
Sure. Well, I don't think they're systemic solutions. I think they're well-intended. I think it's important for local government and state government to be responsive. It's part of how you maintain public trust to not be indifferent to issues like that. But I think longer term, you know, Sherman Park as a neighborhood isn't the problem. Sherman Park, interestingly, for people who don't know, is actually a pretty nice neighborhood. This is not like 53206, which some people may have read about, a zip code that has some of the highest homicide rates in the country. The park itself that the county runs is a beautiful park. There's a Boys and Girls Club in the middle of it. And you had a lot of people from other neighborhoods that were congregating near there. And I think, you know, it's the issue, the bigger issue is race relations. And this is a national conversation we need to be, I think, more proactive about. And economic opportunity, jobs, housing, education, and family. You know, the good news is I think there's a lot more recognition that that last part, family, is part of the equation. We have dramatically ramped up what we're doing with fatherhood. We run child support like all counties do. And the mandate of every child support agency is to get checks to single family, single parents bringing up kids, and it's usually moms. Mm-hmm. We don't have a mandate to support fathers, but 3 or 4 years ago, we started doing a lot for dads, not dozens or hundreds, but thousands, job training, job placement, license recovery, and peer counseling on how to reengage with your kids. Everybody wants to be a good dad, but a lot of these people, they were single dads. They didn't have someone to look up with, and it's being realistic about, you know, where we need to intervene. That and then dealing with childhood trauma. You know, we read about violence, say, in Sherman Park. The story people read in the paper are the guy that's getting hauled away in a squad for shooting somebody. The story they don't read about is the four-year-old son that's sitting on the, you know, stoop at the doorstep that has got something that is going to impact physiologically, we now know, their mental development. We have to be realistic, and we're getting smarter, but we need to be aggressive about that.
We're talking on the day that the re-enrollment period opens for the Affordable Care Act. What's been the impact of the Affordable Care Act on low-income residents of your county?
Sure. Well, when somebody doesn't have to worry about health insurance, for those of us who have insurance, it's sometimes hard to see just how profound an impact and stabilizing impact that is on somebody's life. It's a lot easier to think about your job, your car, your home when you don't have to think about insurance. And that's in an all things being equal situation. All of us have that one or two times a year, we all know, when you're really glad you have health insurance. And the difference between covered and not is a bend in the arc of your life sometimes. And the fact that we've got about 38,000 more people with health insurance in Milwaukee, has actually, it's saved money for the county. We have to serve everybody, and we do a lot of health services, so when people come in and they have insurance, you know, it's covered. But B, you know, I mean, in government, it's what we're supposed to do. We don't leave anybody behind. We try and empower everybody, not just some. And counties in particular, I mean, the programs that we are mandated to serve are based and premised on empowering the most vulnerable, the least among us. And we've been doing, I think, especially given what we've got to work with, a pretty great job. I mean, we're serving a lot more people every single year. We've added the amount of people we're serving.
Ultimate answer for the nation, single payer, universal system?
You know, it's a good question. I don't presume to have you know, to me, I guess the way I think about the Affordable Care Act is the elements that I like. I like not being able to deny somebody for a pre-existing condition. I like a more meaningful, competitive market. That's something which I feel like, you know, right and left can like. I don't disagree with anybody who thinks, can we make things more efficient? Yep, we can do that. But I also like to remind people that, hey, this year there's some noise about the fact that premiums are going up. Well, for 2 years, the two prior years, they went down, and a little like refresher for everybody, prior to that, they were going up pretty much every year and by pretty significant bumps, and you could deny somebody for a pre-existing condition and among many other changes. But I think, you know, in general, it's a net positive.
The part of the domes have reopened, but it doesn't resolve the long-term financial issues.
Right.
Walk me through the decision process for the future of the domes, please.
Sure. So the domes are, we have these three geodesic domes, actually conoidal is the technical name of the shape, that were built about 60 years ago. We have a tropical dome, an arid dome, and a show dome, and they're essentially, it's a conservatory, so people can learn about different types of plant life and environments and climates. The domes, as it turns out, replaced an old Victorian conservatory that had been there for at least 60 years. The two things that inform my thinking about this are we don't have unlimited resources for capital and buildings, and we have a lot of deferred maintenance we're already trying to catch up on. If we want to continue the domes for another 50, 75 years, our assessment is about $75 million. And I guess one of the things I've tried to encourage people to do, and we now have a task force of all sorts of different community members, to say, all right, let's have the discussion framed around, here's what we have to work with, here's the cost, here's the attendance, here's who we partner with, and at least give people the opportunity to think, all right, well, if it's 250,000 people that come every year, what would have to happen for it to be 1 million people? We have a zoo that's over 2 million people. We partner with 4 to 6 nonprofits. What would have to happen, and why don't we partner with 20? Why don't we partner with Marquette or UWM? And imagine a partnership if, before we even started, we said, hey, are there functionalities that you have or could have that would benefit from this? What if we made it more convenient to go to? In fact, if we were going to rebuild them, if we put them by the zoo has enormous amounts of parking, is far more accessible, is very seasonal, domes, you can come in the winter, you'd have the parking, you'd probably have some economies of scale.
Could you put them there for $75
million? You might be able to do it, you might be able to do it for less. Not guaranteed. But I guess the reason I mention it, though, is or you could say, well, is domes what we want to do? Because when people say maintain the legacy of Milwaukee, to me, the legacy of Milwaukee around the domes was 60 years ago, instead of just rebuilding what we had, we as a community said, you know what, we're not just going to rebuild what we had, we're not just going to catch up to the rest of the country, we're going to jump ahead. And I want to make sure we at least give ourselves a chance to look at that. And if the public says, you know what, we've looked at that, we want to do the domes.
We're in.
All right. Okay. I'll try and do
You're
that
in.
As efficiently as
You're
we can.
You're in, too.
Yep.
Okay, time to talk some partisan politics. We just have a few minutes remaining. What do you think of the choice facing Americans for president 1 week from today between Mr. Trump and Secretary Clinton?
It's no secret I'm supporting Hillary, and I've been doing some events for my frustration with Donald Trump, probably like many people, has less to do with politics. I don't think he's particularly ideological. I don't think he's a reflection of most Republicans I know. In fact, a lot of my friends who are Republicans are disgusted and feel like we've kind of lost our way. I look at a guy who, for whom I don't think the word citizenship rings in his ears the way it should ring, certainly in anybody in public office. The way he talks about name a constituency, but, you know, women is something I think we should loudly refute, right or left. I mean, that just, I think it's an opportunity for the Republican Party, and I think I'm hardly the first person to say this, to, you know, think about, all right, what do we want to be with the platform? I mean, I know Paul Ryan has, and I think rightly, been having these town halls and talking to a lot of millennials and saying, look, you see us as not inclusive enough and not dynamic enough. You're not wrong. You're right. So let's talk. I mean, that's how any party.
But don't you have questions about Secretary Clinton's judgment with the emails and now the FBI going through it?
There's no candidate you could possibly bring up that I don't have issues. Remember, before I was supporting Clinton, I was the state agent for Martin O'Malley Dem. So I got over that.
How did that go? Okay.
Well, you got 2%.
I understand.
He had, how was it, 3 debates where he was the other guy on stage who had to kind of, me.
Yes.
Another
political question.
Yep.
Where do you think Sheriff Clark's political future is? What does he want to be?
Cowboy.
Are you surprised at the national attention
that he's getting? No, not really. I mean, right.
The positions that he's taken, so pro-Trump and pitchforks and torches.
The reason I supported this organization a long time ago was precisely because I think it's important to have somewhere in our news media, regardless of whether I agree with what's being said, But coverage that's not primarily informed by validating your team. This country goes in waves, 70, 90 year waves of partisanship. And we are at a, maybe not quite civil war, but wow. But it gets it really hard to get things done, and we focus on who wins and who loses, and we focus on partisanship, not citizenship. Like, we don't look for allies and solutions, we look for problems and enemies. And
well, specifically, what is the term, his term, pitchforks and torches, mean to you?
I think, it means for 5 years, I've never had any particular hesitance in disagreeing publicly or otherwise with the sheriff. I don't think it's I think it's massively irresponsible. I think the way he talks about crime in general, the way he talks about guns, is we should all be held accountable, not just for what we say, but what we do. And part of what we're accountable for is how do the words we choose to use publicly impact the citizens who hear them, and what model are we sending? And in general, I think if you go onto Google and you type in Sheriff Clark accuses, you don't have to type anything more. You're going to get a whole lot of stuff. And, that's his right to, be frustrated with people. But, it's not how you solve problems. And then, essentially questioning government and one step shy of encouraging revolution.
Has Milwaukee County had a full-time sheriff as he travels around the nation?
Well, you may have followed in the last, 8 months or so, we've had a number of deaths in the jail, which is managed by the sheriff. I know the Journal Sentinel recently asked him for comment on the latest one, and he accused them of being a biased, the stuff he usually says about the paper. But what I didn't hear anywhere was a sense of accountability or even, all right, forget who's at fault. What are you going to do about it? This isn't a fender bender. People died. But a big part of that is he's not around a lot. He travels a lot, and he speaks at, conferences. And again, all of that's his right, and he's been stumping with Trump a lot.
Do you hope he doesn't seek re-election in 2018?
I would love to have a great relationship with the sheriff. Increasingly, though, I don't think it's a realistic expectation. And I'd feel down about it if I could look at a bunch of other, professionals in law enforcement with whom he did have a good relationship. But, there's not too many people you can point to of whom you can say, oh, he and the sheriff or she and the sheriff have a great working relationship. What I hope as, somebody, Republican or Democrat, I don't care what their political leanings are, but somebody runs who believes in government, believes in public service, and gets that it's all bigger than us. It's not, the resources I make decisions about, they're not mine, they're yours. I'm very clear on that. I always think it's interesting when elected start using possessive pronouns, my, our, like, whoa, nope, not yours. It's yours.
Speaking of 2018.
Yeah.
You giving any thought to running for governor?
No.
I'm
kind of wondering who's going to sort of shake out.
You want to throw out any names who you'd like to see run as a Dem?
Well, I don't know if there's. Most of the names I can think of are names you probably already talked about. I think some people might have suggested Tom Nelson if he wasn't running for
8th district.
Yeah. Congress. And
has anybody contacted you to see if you'd be willing to support them?
I've had a no shortage.
Representative walks out of
Eau Claire. I haven't talked to
Senator
Dana.
Schilling, Ron Kind.
Ron I like quite a bit, but I kind of like having him where he is. Ron Kind is I think politically a bit more. As a Democrat, he's a sustainability fiscal conservative, And I always tell people, fiscal conservative, I tell my Democratic friends, it doesn't mean I want to blow up government. I believe in government. It means I believe in efficiency and sustainability. And government's here to serve the people and not the other way around. And
so you're not thinking about governor in 2018, but are you thinking about a higher office eventually?
I'm actually right now thinking about how I'm going to make up for a wheel tax that's $30 lower than what I wanted.
And, I understand.
I do get excited about, for 5 years, I've worked really hard to pay down debt and, turn a whole bunch of trajectories at the county around in a lot of ways that nobody thought we could. And I've worked really hard to bring in a team that I'm incredibly proud of. And selfishly, to me, I've been involved in business and turnarounds. This is the fun part. We're getting good at what we do. And there's a lot of people who believe in government. Actually, I've hired a lot of vets. Not that it's been a specific plan, but our new airport directors, Air Force, our child support directors, Navy, our superintendent at the House is Army, our emergency management, Marines. They argue about whose force, that's always, I stay out of those. Marines, they take charge.
Did you resent the Journal Sentinel story on your not paying state income taxes? Was that an unfair shot?
It's not unreasonable for somebody to see something like that and sort of absent kind of an understanding of what's behind it, think, it just seems unfair. I've told people the reason that's the case is, there's a number. One, for years I ran, among other things, a charitable foundation, and I thought it was a privilege to do and chose not to take a salary to do it. So I wasn't paying income tax on income I wasn't taking, and this is what we're talking about, is income tax. But also, I've continued for 20 years. I've been in Wisconsin. A lot of the money I have, I give to nonprofits, mostly youth service, education, arts, environment. You get the write-off for that. Also, I invest in a lot of startups here, and you get the operating loss carry forward. Now that said, I like to point out that the companies I'm investing in are hiring lots of people here. They pay taxes, the companies do. So do all those employees. They spend here. It's a net positive. And, just the relativities, I probably give on average, $500,000 or more, personally, just to Wisconsin-based nonprofits. And I would pay on my salary here maybe about, I think it's about $11,000, and I'm investing millions into local companies. So I feel like the state's getting a good, but that said, should we rethink tax policy? Sure, I think we should rethink capital gains to encourage more patient capital. Low rate if you stay in a company, stick in it for 3 years, 5%. But if you're a day trader and you're in and out of a stock 20 times a minute, 70%. That doesn't help the market. That destabilizes the market. It would raise a lot of money too, but you'd never get it through Congress.
Final question.
Yeah.
In the next state budget, 2017, 2019, top two Milwaukee County needs in that state budget?
Transit funding and it sounds boring, but shared revenue. I'll say this just as a personal priority. I care about economic development. I care about enterprise and, in particular, startups and venture. And I do think there's a lot of things the state could do. It's not even about money, just policy-wise, that would dramatically improve our ability to attract outside capital.
Okay.
And I think that's worth being aggressive about.
And I lied. This is my final question. Everything falling together in the Bucks Arena a few blocks away?
Good? No, I'm glad you asked. Yeah, so outside of the 400 whatever million that's being spent on the actual arena and related things, $234 million of private investment has happened in the Park East. And just to remind people, that was empty for 15 years. We're 97%. We went from the whole thing's wide open to 97% of the entire thing is already committed and financed. Real jobs. When you drove in, you probably saw there's a lot of cranes out there.
Yes, there are. Yeah.
That's good stuff.
That's great. Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abley, thanks for your time.
You bet.
Thank you.